A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we got more Royals baseball to talk about, and it's fantastic. Before we get into that, of course, introductions. As always, I am your host, Jeff Herr, and with me, the feckless Michael Engel. I gotta be honest, I don't know what that means. I heard it the other day.
Oh no.
I just thought I'd throw it out. So if you know what it means, perhaps you can enlighten myself and maybe some listeners. But if not, then we'll just keep rolling.
Well, Google says it's lacking initiative, so.
Well, then that's.
Thanks.
Didn't mean it. I figured it was probably negative, but, you know, I had to throw it out. It was funny. So you are not feckless. I apologize.
The good thing is that nobody's going to hear this episode until 3 months from now when I finally get around to actually doing it, the editing on it.
There you go. So positive. Chalk that up in a positive.
Yeah. Feckless. Whatever.
You know, what are you going to do?
I have my moments.
You know, sometimes you just got to roll with it. And that's what I did. Sometimes it backfires.
It sounds okay. I mean, it's you know cadence, okay, the inflections, it works. I mean, just as a sounding of a word.
Right. It's a cool word. It's just not very nice, apparently.
Yeah. So
that's okay. Now, as we move back towards Royal stuff, we're going to have – there's not a ton of news, just kind of business as usual here. Nothing super – not quite like the beginning of last season where there's a ton of newsworthy things, not all of which involved the Royals winning lots of games, which is what they did. But there is some noteworthy things to talk about. So we'll have maybe a shorter show, you know, 2-3 hours or so.
Right.
And then you can go about your day. So first – Mike and I, we want to talk about something, and this is something that I've kind of thought about, Mike, the last couple days with the Royals. And so if you look at the last 10 games, minus last night, of course, last night against the Angels. So the previous 10 games before that, by the way, we're recording on Tuesday, April 26th. So when I say last night about the Angels, there's your frame of reference, the first game that they lost, first game of that series that they lost 7-1. So the previous 10 games before that, the Royals had quite a good stretch there. They went 7-3. And what I really like about that is you had a 4-game series against the Astros in Houston. You had a 3-game series against the Tigers, and you had a 3-game series against the Orioles. Now, Houston, obviously, the team that pushed the Royals the hardest in the postseason last year. They were an inning and a half away, two innings away from kicking out the defending American League champions and possibly taking one step closer to being the Royals of 2015 and just storming out of nowhere. But they didn't. The Royals fought them back. And they run on, and we all know the rest is history on that. The Detroit Tigers had, you know, last year the Royals obviously won the Central Division, but the previous 4 years before that, the Tigers had won. And they are still, you know, they had a rough year last year, but they're still wanting to stake their claim. And the Baltimore Orioles had gotten off to one of the hottest starts in baseball, one of the best records in the American League, leading the East. Got off to a really hot start offensively, and each time the Royals won each series, they took 3 out of 4 from the Astros, including winning 3 straight after losing the first one, and then 2 out of 3 from the Tigers, 2 out of 3 from the Orioles. And what I liked about it the most was just that after mentioning all that I did about what these teams are and what they represent or what they're trying to do, you know, not only do all these teams think they could be one of the better teams in the American League this year, even Detroit, even though that may be a little delusional. But especially with the starts that they got off to, they all kind of thought, hey, we can do this, I'm sure. And the Royals have that target on their back. Defending two-time defending AL champs, World Series champs, they're going to get your best shot. The Astros came up, pummeled them in game one of their series, and the Royals came back and took three straight. You know, the Tigers, the Orioles gave them their best shot. The Royals had that, took care of business. And it was really great to see, because a few years ago, I want to say 2010 or 2011, I remember the Royals were in a situation where they were hovering close to 500. It was, you know, maybe 50 or so games into the season, 50, 60 games. And they had a four-game series with the Twins, and it was in Kansas City. And that was back when, kind of right before the Twins fall, when they were still a pretty good team. So, like I said, I want to say it's 2010, 2011. And it was a thing where if they swept the Twins, they would be – I think they would have been, like, if not in first place, second place, and then they would have been above 500. And they just got swept by the Twins, and it was back to being horrible baseball. So that was a time where the Royals kind of thought maybe they were close, they were ready to take that step, and the Twins just said nope and smacked them back down. And that's exactly what the Royals did this last three times. I mean, the Orioles made the playoffs not last year, but the two previous years. They were in the ALCS, obviously, losing to the Royals. The Tigers made the playoffs so many times recently. The Astros looking to be that team that jumps up. And every time the Royals just smacked them back down and said, uh-uh, you got to come through us, and it's not going to be easy. So for me, the last 10 games, while there's been nothing particularly noteworthy from the Royals in those 10 games, what I did like was just that fact that, you know, and really you can make the argument that they're not even playing all that well right now, especially offensively. And still, these teams came at them with their best shot, and the Royals took it and came swinging right back and took 7 out of 10 from three quality teams, and you know, has solidified themselves as one of the top teams in the American League. I think in the early going, you know, it's hard to argue now in the top five in the ESPN power ranking. So I thought that was pretty cool. I don't know. What were your thoughts?
I mean, the offense really hasn't gotten going yet. So to have a team where Lorenzo Cain's batting 200 and Kendrys Morales has been kind of, he's had either a good game or a bad game, basically. You know, Alcides Escobar is not hitting that well. To come out of that with, you know, the second most wins in the American League, you know, they're only trailing the White Sox in the American League. The White Sox are getting insane pitching right now. So we'll see how long that lasts. Matt Latos probably not going to be a Cy Young candidate all year, but you know, they came out, and I always think about, like, you know, you talk about the World Series hangover, and the Royals really have not experienced that. Now the offense has maybe it's sputtered in a number of spots. Dave Lesky wrote on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City about some of the situational hitting that the Royals have had this season compared to previous seasons. And last year, it seemed like anytime the Royals needed that hit to kind of either break a game open or start that comeback, they would get it, or they would string together those four or five hits. They would go through that frenzy hitting, keep the line moving, all of those things. This year, it hasn't really happened as often as you would kind of think watching that same team last year. And on one hand, it can't do that because that's a pretty significant – it's tough to get everybody in the lineup going at the same time. And right now you see basically what he pointed out was, you know, Alcides Escobar not having a great year. Mike Moustakas is having a good start. Lorenzo Cain not good yet. Eric Hosmer, good start. And every other hitter is kind of doing something – is struggling in some sense, or they're having a really good start. So when you've got a lineup where – It's kind of disjointed that way, then yeah, I guess it is going to be tough to string together some hits. And so to see the Royals come out and kind of just have to scrape by and find a way to win, you know, they're really doing it by their defense and pitching, which I don't know if people expected the starting rotation to be this good, and that's really what staved off that kind of hangover effect. You know, the Royals have played 19 games, and in 14 of those, they've allowed three runs or fewer. And if you do that, you're going to have a good chance to win any given day. You know, you just have to score those four runs. And that was the magic number in 2014. Last year, it wasn't quite as big of a deal, but, you know, still, you score four runs. The Royals should expect to win that game. And they're really doing a lot of the defensive things and a lot of the pitching things that allow them to continue to have some success despite, you know, good teams. You look at Houston, they've got two of the best starting players right now. You know, Jose Altuve and Cody Rasmus, or Colby Rasmus.
Cody is his evil brother. Cody Rasmus is feckless, is what he is.
Right, right. But he's probably got better facial hair. But those two guys are the top guys in wins above replacement right now. They're having great seasons right away. Baltimore has Manny Machado, who's playing great, and Chris Davis is producing. And so you look at those two teams, and those are two really, really good offensive teams, and the Royals did fine with them. And then Detroit, you know, they've always been Detroit, but, you know, the Royals faced Jordan Zimmermann, didn't do much against him, but they did the damage against the other guys in that rotation. And, you know, even though Miguel Cabrera has been kind of slumping, the Royals have, you know, they still handled him. You know, he's still Miguel Cabrera. It's still Victor Martinez. It's still JD Martinez. It's still Ian Kinsler. There's still a lot of firepower in that lineup. And so for the Royals to go through three tough lineups like that and come out in really good shape, you know, that's a good sign. You know, that shows that this team is just as for real as we had hoped and just as, you know, just as ready to show that last year wasn't a fluke, which was to show that the year before had not been a fluke. And so I think at this point, you have to take notice that the Royals are playing good baseball, and they're just a good baseball team, which is a comforting thing considering where we've been watching this team so many years where they couldn't even be considered close to good. And now they're a legitimately good baseball team that does so many things well that a lot of teams don't do well. And even though they're not hitting that well yet, it still puts them in a position where they can win pretty much any night, with the exception now and then. You know, they were a little flat last night, and, you know, they didn't have a good game against Baltimore when Medlin started. But, you know, still, they're generally having more productive days, and even when they're a little bit off, they're still finding a way to get runs across and hold leads and make the win hold up. So, you know, it's encouraging. And if you can get those early season wins against a team like Detroit, or, you know, even against Baltimore, or you go to Houston, you know, and take three out of four there, that's a huge deal. That's really a good thing. You get to jump ahead of Detroit early. You know, you can take Baltimore's best shot and turn them away, and you get to try to bury a really tough team on the road. Just right away. And now the next time they play Houston, it's going to be in Kansas City, which should favor the Royals, and it sets them up even better. So, you know, I think they're in good shape. You know, you still want to see Kane come around. You still want to see Gordon continue to kind of progress. He hasn't struck out as much lately, so that's a good thing. But, you know, I think a lot of it really comes down to pitching and defense, which is not surprising when it's the Royals.
And that's what's been the most encouraging sign for me, because you talked about the World Series hangover. And with this team, it kind of felt – it just feels different, that I never really thought that was going to be an issue, because they're so focused. Like, I think that's – you know, if you want to talk about all the – if we want to talk about intangibles that a team can have that a winning team – and they're, I mean, those are things that – you know, are important, even though, you know, we like to skew towards the numbers more on this show. But those we have recognized that those are important. And in terms of that, you know, I don't know that I've ever seen a team more focused. I mean, the Royals are they're like the Golden State Warriors. You know, I'm not trying to say they're as dominant as the Warriors have been this year, because they're obviously not. But in terms of, like, when you go out and you see a team that's just so focused and so on task, like, it's just really impressive. And to see – I think there was kind of a perception out there previously, not necessarily from kind of the pundits, if you will, because the ones that are really around baseball, I think, have kind of stood up and taken notice and everything. But, you know, from opposing fans and such, I think there's kind of a, God, the lucky Royals, and everything has to go perfect and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, there's that fine line between how much of it is things happening and the ball bouncing in the Royals' favor and how much of it is the Royals making these things happen. You know, how much of it is Lucas Duda making a bad throw and how much of it is Eric Hosmer forcing Lucas Duda to make a bad throw by putting pressure on him to make a perfect throw. You know, I mean, these kinds of things, it's impossible to tell, but I feel like there's kind of that perception from some of the opposing fans that it's everything had to go perfect for the Royals to win. And once things didn't start going their way, the Royals were going to be a losing team again. And things really haven't gone the Royals' way this year. I mean, as good as Eric Hosmer has been hitting and playing, he's hit into a lot of bad luck. I've seen him just rope a lot of balls that have been right at guys and gotten caught and gotten fielded. And he's kind of been robbed, and he's still hitting really well. And, you know, a lot of players have dealt with some, you know, just – again, anecdotally, because we looked it up last show, and as a team, they're hitting around BABIP-wise what you would expect. But Alex Gordon, like you've mentioned, Alex Gordon, Lorenzo Cain, still kind of finding their way this season, which has been somewhat disappointing. But even despite all that, they're still winning ball games. And possibly the most important aspect of that is how the starting pitching has performed, with Ian Kennedy doing really well. He got tagged a little bit his most recent outing, but
yeah,
he's pitched very well overall this season, and I'm very happy with what he's done so far. Edinson Volquez has been great so far, better than last season even so far. And Yordano Ventura, we can kind of talk about this for a little bit. It feels like we're seeing some important maturation with Yordano Ventura. And again, this is with Ventura, there's this kind of default to always want to talk about his personality and, you know, those types of things, kind of off the field things. And so try and differentiate with him. When I talk about maturity, I'm talking about the maturity of his game, of his pitching, more so than I am his, you know, ability to handle things. You know, while that is a piece of it, that's more what I'm talking about here. And, you know, last year, sometimes I think he wasn't able to adapt to situations as well in terms of his pitching, and that's what got him in trouble sometimes. And this year, you've seen him do that quite a bit more. Specifically, his most recent outing, where, again, this is as of April 26th, so we're talking about Sunday when he pitched against the Orioles. And so my wife wanted to see, they were showing On the Waterfront. They do this classic series at Cinemark. So my wife really wanted to see that. So we dropped the kid off with the grandparents. And point being, I wasn't able to watch the whole game, but her parents had the game on. It was starting right when the movie was starting. So I was able to see like the first inning or so, or not the first, the first batter or so. And I saw one pitch from your dog. It was a 95-mile-per-hour fastball that had some really good life on it. I was like, oh, I bet Yordano's going to be dirty today. And then, you know, we dropped the baby off. And then by the time I get to the theater, I get a notification, and it's 1-0 Orioles. And there's man on second and third with one out. And I'm like, holy crap, what is going on here? Like maybe my perception of what I thought Ventura was going to do today was wrong. But then he settled down. And he had he gave up 2 hits and a walk in the first inning. And then he pitched 6 more innings and only gave up 1 more hit, 1 walk, and had 4 strikeouts. So I was pretty impressed with his ability to have a rocky first inning and really come back and just settle down and shut them down. And now I don't know if you watched the game again. I didn't see it, but, you know, I can just look at the box score and see that that's obviously pretty impressive given that first inning. So, I mean, what were your thoughts on how he was able to kind of rein it in there, and did you watch the game to see, you know, if it seemed like what my perception is from the box score was accurate?
Yeah, I mean, what the biggest thing was that first inning, he threw like 28 pitches, and, you know, so, you know, fly ball, walk, strikeout, single to score a run, and they got a ground out, but it took him 28 pitches to get through these guys. So, you know, five pitches, four, six, you know, just really kind of laboring against guys, and, you know, maybe that's just a first inning thing. Maybe it's the fact that, hey, it's the Orioles and they're good. But he limited it to one. You know, there were just singles, They're ground ball singles that got through. You know, nothing really too scary. And, you know, I came out of that first inning thinking, okay, well, it's one run. He held them. Maybe he can get through five innings and be fine. And he came out the next inning, 9 pitches. The next inning, 8 pitches. The next inning, 8 pitches. And at that point, he was in a groove. Like, it was, he was changing speeds well. He was throwing his fastball well. He was, he has a little two-seam thing happening now and then. That like, 94-mile-per-hour pitch has a little two-seam action on it. Haven't looked at any of the
stuff. I think that's what I saw when I was
saying
it was going to be dirty.
Yeah, because he's not throwing as hard, but he does have a little bit more movement, and he's changing speeds a bit more, and he's throwing his curveball more and his changeup more. So, you know, he's really pitching now. He's not just throwing that fire. He's really pitching to these guys, and he kept them off balance. He took a good lineup and really neutralized them, and that run in the first, that was the only run they got. And he looked like a kid that was just in control through the whole thing. You know, other than that first inning, that was a little rough, but he didn't really run into any kind of trouble later. And I think that's something that last year you would have really figured, okay, he's, you know, at some point, yeah, he's cruising. But as soon as you get into trouble, then, okay, well, what's going to happen here? We saw last year early, he was so bad with runners on and just – the splits were remarkable. He was so much worse when runners were on base, and that really allowed innings to get away from him, runs to score. His pitch count goes up, so now he's not going deeper, and then it's like, who is this? You know, this guy that you start on opening day, who is he? And yesterday, or I mean Sunday, he looked a lot different. He looked like somebody who was just poised and in control, looked comfortable. I mean, he was cruising. It was really nice to see. And he's had good starts. You know, the first start, he walked 6 guys against the Twins. They really worked his pitch count. And that, you know, that's not ideal. But he's getting strikeouts. He's thrown 6 innings on average pretty much per start. You know, he's throwing well. He's not giving up a lot of hits. He's given up just 1 home run. And that was in Houston. So I think we'll forgive him for that. Yeah, he looks very much in control, and I don't know how much of that is that he knows that Edinson Volquez is kind of stepped up to be the guy, and he's showing Ventura how to be that guy. I mean, going back to those intangibles, or if it's just a matter of he kind of recognizes where he's at in his career and has kind of figured out, okay, here are my strengths, here are the situations where I don't do well in, and here's how I can avoid those bad situations and maybe pitch out of it without trying to, you know, it's almost like when you're in a slump as a hitter and you just try easier. And it seems like that's what he's been able to do, is he's just a lot more fluid. He looks a lot better than he did at any point last year. In second half, that's maybe not fair. He looked pretty good in a lot of starts in the second half, but you know, I don't know if that's just an adjustment. They've talked a lot about how he's adjusted his regular windup, you know, where he steps just slightly differently. If maybe that's a timing thing that keeps him on top of it, you know, where he wants to be. If so, that's a pretty impactful small adjustment. And if it leads to results that make him more comfortable and more you know, confident in how he's approaching these hitters, well, that's great, because, I mean, he's run through some pretty strong lineups, Minnesota excepting, you know, Houston, Detroit, Baltimore. He beat all of them, you know, and he held them through 18 innings. He held them to 4 total runs. So that's pretty impressive, and that's a good place to start for him to kind of see some of that potential that a lot of people have seen, and that, you know, you called him one of your Cy Young vote getting guy. So he's kind of getting there, and if it continues where he's doing this 5 out of every 6 starts, he's gonna have a really good year.
Yeah, and you know, I think there is, the only issue I can have, if I want to kind of nitpick at it, is the walks. He's been giving up more than I'd like to see from him, but it's been decreasing, you know, from that first start where he had six strikeouts and six walks and in six innings or six and a third or whatever it was. And so that number has been decreasing, which is good. And if he can get that number under control while still maintaining the high strikeout numbers, I mean, look out. He's going to really turn into that player that we thought he was going to be and that we all want him to be. And so, you know, I'm excited. I think I'm definitely pleased with that. So, I mean, if you can get what we've been getting, Ian Kennedy, where you get three out of four starts are really good, and then maybe he gives you a dud, which seems very Ian Kennedy-like. If that's what we get, then I'm okay with that. You know, if we get what we've gotten from Volquez, and he starts tonight, so we'll see from him if he can keep it going. And then get what we got from Ventura. And then, you know, Chris Young's been struggling, but then he goes and does what he did the other day and has a 10-strikeout performance.
Right.
You know, Chris Young.
Chris Young. Just
out of nowhere. Like, you know, and it was something where, you know, I think maybe they one of those like, oh, yeah, we had an issue and a mechanical issue and now we fixed it. And so it's like, well, if that means he has 10 strikeouts every time, I'll take it. So that right. was pretty sweet to see that.
He's got the highest strikeout per nine inning rate. In the starting rotation,
which is insane.
Yeah. Know? So 9.2 per nine innings. Just okay. that'll work.
Which is really interesting. And, you know, I heard something on the radio. This is not related to the Royals, but, and I hadn't really, I just kind of thought about it with this. So I'll mention it, but I heard, Tim Kirchen on 810. And one of the things he said about today, cause the strikeout numbers again, are up this year. You know, Royal strikeouts have been a huge problem, but I'd have to look relative to the league. I haven't looked recently, but I don't know that they're, you know, they're not the hardest team to strike out like they were last year, but I don't know that their increase in strikeouts has made them demonstrably worse. So they're up across baseball, and obviously the pitching has gotten so precise and so specialized. And Kirchen made a point about how he said, okay, hitters now basically have one swing, and it's like, meaning like a swing path. And so it's basically a slot machine. You know, they look for their shot and they swing. And if they get, you know, they're hoping they could make good contact. And if they do, then it's a home run. It's a nice shot. If not, maybe it still falls in for a hit, or, you know, they miss it completely and they strike out a lot. And that the, in order to combat this, but that one particular swing path is really good. So if they make good contact, it's always going to be good. Or if they make contact, it's more than likely going to be good. So pitchers have noticed this and found a way, okay, we've just got to stay away from that one swing path zone. And then pitchers have gotten really good at doing that, and hitters haven't been able to. And so there's your differentiation between your, you know, Lorenzo Cain's of the world and your Mike Trout's, because Mike Trout has more, or, and the example that was brought up when talking with Kirchen on the radio was a Tony Gwynn or Barry Bonds, you know, guys that have multiple swing paths and multiple swings, and then don't lose any contact ability. They don't lose any power. Because, I mean, obviously players have more than one swing, but, you know, you've seen it with Eric Hosmer, with Mike Moustakas, Lorenzo Cain. When they have to alter their swing from the one they're comfortable with, it's not a very well-hit ball. Mm-hmm. And so that's where you get, you know, if Tony Gwynn has 16 different swing paths or whatever, and he doesn't lose anything with any of them, you know, and that's what made him such a good hitter.
He struck out like 100 times total in 20 years.
Yeah, it's something like he'd have to strike out 1,000 times consecutively to have a batting average under 300 in his career. If he was, I mean, obviously he's no longer alive, but, you know, if he were and having to play, I mean, that's insane. But anyway, that's beside the point. So
yeah,
the reason it made me think about that was just with Chris Young, you know, there's been much made about how he doesn't throw the ball really hard and all that, and having, you know, I guess you could argue that, you know, 10 strikeouts in a game is kind of a fluke, but like you said, he's leading the team in strikeouts per nine right now. It's not, and he's been doing this. You know, he had games like that last year too, where you just look out, it's seven strikeouts in five innings or something.
Yeah, and that when he came in game one against Houston in the ALDS, struck out like seven guys in like four innings, and so, he struck out some guys against the Mets in game one when he came in extra innings. So he can do it. And I guess going off of Kirkchen's point, then, you know, that slider and that deception, if he's placing it, if he's getting the command of it, yeah, I guess you can find the right spot to miss. That makes sense.
And especially when you consider, you know, I mean, Greg Maddux, one of the greatest pitchers of our generation, he wasn't a hard thrower, you know, low 90s, barely fastball. But his big thing was command control, and that's what Chris Young tries to play. So it does go to show that, you know, given the choice, I'd like to have a Yordano Ventura who can fireball it at 100 miles an hour over a Chris Young, because it's, you know, it's, it gives you a greater margin for error. But if you, even if you don't have that huge number on the radar gun, if you've still got it to a point where you can put that ball anywhere you want, and that's very difficult, but if you can, mm-hmm. you can still be very effective. And that's what Chris Young, I think, has reached at this point in his career, where he's not necessarily, you know, Greg Maddux putting the ball over the place, but he has his zones that he gets into where he can locate very well, and it turns him into a very successful pitcher.
Yeah, I think that we might see some of that when the Royals face Jared Weaver tonight, who throws about
82.
80. I mean, if it comes in straight, I might have a shot at hitting that thing, you know.
What a precipitous downfall Jared Weaver has had over the last 3 years.
He's been effective so far this year, but I don't know how long
just
he
in
can
terms
continue
of, like,
that.
A skill set, you know.
Oh, yeah. Like, he looked like one of the top 10 pitchers in baseball, and then he kind of he wasn't.
He is certainly not anymore. Like you said, he's been effective this year, so, you know, who knows if it'll continue. But
I don't know. I mean, I think the Royals have a shot to hit him, so that hopefully will be the case tonight.
And so we said it's going to be a short show, so we're not going to wrap up quite yet. But as our last point, I think something we haven't really talked about, Mike, that it might be worth, just the rest of the division. You kind of talked about
mm-hmm.
we've kind of hit on different teams here and there, but right now the Royals are, is it a game and a half back of the White Sox?
Yep.
Game and a half back of the White Sox, and they've come out to kind of a scorching start, much kind of unexpected. And the, you know, the Indians are doing okay. The Tigers are doing okay. The Tigers look much worse thanks to the Royals taking 2 out of 3 from them. Minnesota's Minnesota. So when you look at the division, we don't have to go super in depth, but, you know, the White Sox at 14-6, Indians at 9-8, Detroit at 9-9, Royals obviously at 12-7. I mean, what do you think right now with how the division currently stands, and how do you think it's actually going to shake out?
Well, I wasn't sure what the White Sox, or if they had done enough. You know, I mean, they got Lowry, they got Frazier, they got Matt Latos. They already had Carlos Rodon and obviously Chris Sale. They look a little for real. I mean, they've made a couple of comebacks and had a couple of games where they just kind of made it work. It was kind of Royals-esque. They made a big comeback on the Blue Jays bullpen the other day. I think it was yesterday. And then on Saturday or Sunday, they had a game where they went into extras and managed to eke out a win. I mean, they're going to be tough all year, I think. I mean, you look at what the Royals did last season. They got out to a hot start, and it really kind of pushed them the rest of the way. So I think the way it's kind of setting up, the Royals, you know, the Royals started 15-7 last year, and the White Sox right now are 14-6. So they're right in that same kind of area. You know, I just don't think that the White Sox are going to run away. I think the Royals and White Sox are probably going to be back and forth for a good part of the year as it's setting up now. Now, obviously, injuries can change that. And that's one reason why I would kind of discount Cleveland, because they have not done great, and they just lost Carlos Carrasco, I think it was, to a hamstring injury. So he's going to be out for like 6 weeks. So that's going to be difficult for them. Trevor Bauer will step into the rotation there. Not sure how that's going to go. He hasn't, you know, been very effective, you know, maybe in spots, but not consistently. And Detroit, I don't know. I mean, they've got Zimmerman, and he's good, and you could probably get something out of Anibal Sanchez and Justin Verlander a lot. But I just don't know. They just seem like they're, by the time you get into the dog days, they may not be the same team. I think Kinsler's going to be good no matter what. I think he's going to be solid. But you look at Cabrera, he started out pretty poorly this year. Martinez has already had knee injuries in spring training. He's not going to get any healthier. They lost James McCann, who was one of their up-and-coming players. He'll be back, but you know they've still got to piece it together. And they still haven't really done a whole lot about the bullpen. It seems like it's more effective in the middle relief, but you know they've still got to go out and show it. Until these guys show that they can hold leads, I'm going to think they're the same old Tigers bullpen. And you know, so, and I'm not even worried about the Twins. The Twins are, they don't have pitching. They're not healthy. Even their young players aren't really playing that great. So, you know, I guess Sinnoh is, but Buxton's not. They just optioned him down. And
this is the Twins 2004 to last year's 2003 Royals is what this is.
Kind, yeah, they have more actual talent, or at least potential talent.
Right, but they may have the same results though in terms of win loss. So
yeah, this might be like they're 2012, where they kind of have expectations. The Royals of 2012. There are expectations because they had an okay season or they had some excitement in the season before, but it turns out they're regressing. So I don't know. I think that they've got a lot of, you know, young talent, but it's not shown up yet. And so I'm not really worried about them, especially not in the whole. They're not a team that looks like they're built to make a jump. They're just going to have to deal with it and, you know, keep their guys healthy and develop. So I don't know. I think it's probably going to be, I don't know. I think I'm most worried about the White Sox all year, and then we'll see who emerges from Detroit and Cleveland. I'm just not terribly concerned. Cleveland is getting Michael Brantley back, so that's going to be a benefit to them. But you know, the rest of that team's not super frightening, really. You know, it's just not that scary of a team. I mean, I don't know. I just don't see it. They've got the rotation and that's kind of about it to me. And that rotation's been hurt already. So, you know, we'll see what happens from there.
Yeah, I pretty well echo your concern echo your thoughts on the division. I think the Tigers, I mean, their fatal flaw the last decade basically, or better part of a decade, I should say, where they've had, you know, good teams and so much talent, and Miguel Cabrera in his prime and Victor Martinez in his prime, and they've been Justin Verlander in his prime, and they made a World Series, but they couldn't win one. And it's been that bullpen as their Achilles heel, and I still don't see it getting any better. And I think it's going to be their downfall again. So it's going to, I don't know, it's going to keep them from really making a run at the Royals. And the White Sox, you know, their pitching has gotten off to an incredible start, but I don't think Matt Latos is going to have a sub-1 ERA for an entire season. Right. And I don't think their bullpen either, who basically has no one you've ever heard of, except do they have
David Robertson there. Yeah,
okay. That's the only a real name guy.
They've had Matt Albers has 10 appearances and hasn't allowed a run yet. I don't know if you can really expect that. Jake Petrichka, who's been there for a while, but you know, maybe he's coming into his own. I don't know. There's nobody particularly frightening in there. It's not to the extent
There's no Wade Davis. Yeah. There's no Herrera. None of that. So yeah. You know, it's. I'm not convinced that they can keep it going at this rate. To say that they will, you know, they'll be the Royals' main competition, I think, is fair at this point. Because, like you said, the Indians have just seemingly have just injury after injury the last couple of years. So. But I definitely think the White Sox will probably end up being the stiffest competition. But how much of it that will be, you know, remains to be seen. But I do think last year you mentioned the Royals got off to that big 15-7 start, took off, ran off with the division, and no. I don't see that to be the case this year. I think it's going to be more of a dogfight all season long. And I think eventually, you know, it might be two or three games maybe that end up separating it at the most. But, you know, I think the Royals are going to have to fight deep into August and September to get this thing wrapped up versus last year that it was a little bit easier. So, you know, we'll kind of see. But I don't think
– The Royals are in a position where they've been through a lot of these situations now. They're pretty battle tested, and if they're in there at the end, I think that's got to give them an edge. You know, for whatever it's worth, they've got to have some kind of benefit coming from, hey, you know, they made that comeback in Houston and they held off Toronto and they found a way to get by the Mets. I just, you know, I think that, you know, it's almost like when the Royals in 2013 were approaching, and you could tell they were good, but they just weren't quite there yet. And that might be where some of these teams are, especially if, you know, Chicago, their pitching cools down. You know, their hitters, nobody's really broken out, but, you know, I just can't see a lot of those guys, you know, doing well. Jimmy Rollins is playing above average, and, you know, Adam Eaton's good, but I don't know if he's going to be a star, and I just don't have a high opinion of Brett Lowry as a player or a human. So I don't know. I don't know how they're going to hold up. You know, Frazier and Jose Abreu, they're scary, but Abreu hasn't done anything. So maybe that's a point in the White Sox favor, but I don't know. I don't want to, you know, have to fend them off all year, but I'm not super worried about them, I guess, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of in the same boat. So I think with that, we'll kind of wrap up the show here. It's been kind of a slow week. They're just, the roads have been kind of business as usual, taking care of business. And we got a thunderstorm, sounds like, rolling in, so we don't want that to mess too much with the recording. So yeah. we will call it a show for you, an actual short show for once. What do you know?
Yeah, so, yeah, go, you know, figure. We still don't know who the Becky with the good hair is, or
we are unsure,
or anything spoiler about Game of Thrones.
Yes,
those are our pop culture references for the
blank,
week.
Blank. This pop culture day, we have a quota,
I guess.
The quota has been reached,
we might as well.
So, yeah.
What's it going to hurt, I guess?
Well, nothing now. So, all right. Well, with that, we will leave you. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Perspectives affiliate. For Michael Engel, I am Jeff Herr, and thank you all so very much for listening. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com. It's springtime, which means two things: Royals baseball and the Westport Block Party. The fifth annual Westport Block Party is once again hosted by McCoy's and our friends at Kelly's Westport Inn. The Westport Block Party is May 29th, starting at 8 p.m., rain or shine, and tickets are just $10. Wait, did I say $10? If you order before May 1st, they're half priced. Your ticket is only $5, and your ticket gets you access to a fun annual tradition of dancing in the streets and the best beers in town. And this year, your ticket gets you one drink on the house, and you even get to take home a souvenir event koozie. Come on out and hear Twice on Sunday as they mix the songs you love and have a drink on Kelly's. That is the Westport Block Party, May 29th, starting at 8 p.m. Follow Kelly's at Kelly's Bar KC on Twitter, or visit kellyswestportinn.com for ticket details.